Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 14. Yasya anuraga plutaha sarasa.
Lilavaloka
pratilabdhamanaha. Rajastriyo drigbiranu prabritta.
Rajastriyo drigbiranu prabritta.
Tiyo vatashtu kila kritya seshaha.
Tiyo vatashtu kila kritya seshaha.
Yasya.
Yasya.
Whose?
Anuraga.
Attachment. Pluta. Enhanced by hasa, laughter, rasa, humors, lila, pastimes, avaloka, glancing, pratilabdha, obtained thereof, manaha, anguished, prajastriyaha. Damsels of Braj, Trigbihi, with the eyes, Anupravritta, following, Dhiyaha, by intelligence, Avatashtuhu, sat silently, Kila, indeed. Kritya-se-shaha, without finishing household duties. I can see you now. Thank you. Kritya-se-shaha. The damsels of Braj, after pastimes of laughter, humour and exchange of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Purport. In his boyhood in Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious as a teasing friend and transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy. And the damsels of Braj were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Lord Krishna finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord's teasing behaviour, when Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and used to follow him with their eyes and minds. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him even in the dealing of love exchange between boys and girls. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. Jnanatimirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadatiska Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatayanam. Krishna was so attractive that the gopis couldn't stop thinking of him even for a moment. You know, one of the points that's made here is that the affection between Krishna and his Vrindavan devotees is so strong that the limits of affection have never been manifest or never demonstrated so strongly as those exhibited by Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. So Prabhupada mentions here that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. So even though Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are elevated devotees in very responsible positions. You know, they're big devotees. Lord Brahma is the head of our sampradaya, the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya sampradaya. He's the head of our sampradaya, so he starts the tradition. Lord Shiva also is the head of the Rudra Sampradaya, so a very elevated devotee. Yet, their devotional mood or their devotional existence isn't as elevated as the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis. Who are just, you know, from all, you know, if you go to Varshana, for example. Anybody here been to Varshana? Yeah. What's Varshana like? How would you describe Varshana?
Most ecstatic.
Okay, yeah. How else would you describe it?
Hills.
Hill, yeah. Yeah, that's Varshana. That's the hill. The town of Varshana, how would you describe it? I know how I describe it. What, Sukadev, what do you describe it as?
Transcendental.
You're all seeing it. Okay, all right. I'll give you my mundane perspective. It's just an Indian tractor town. Right? From the external point of view, it's just an Indian tractor town. Very few people have cars, but everybody's got a tractor. Because they're a village, you know, they're village people. Right? So you hear the clanking of the tractor, and it clanks down the road. And the boys and girls there, what are they? Okay, they're all transcendental, but what are they like? Very simple. And keep an eye on your camera and everything else that you've got in your pockets. Because they'll always be asking for it. And if you're not don't keep an eye on it, they'll pinch it. Huh? So, if you look at the kids, they're very fresh faced, they're very simple hearted people. This is from the external. This is the external, because we understand that this is the eternal abode of Radha and Krishna. But very difficult, you know, it's described how in Kali Yuga the Dham becomes covered. Just like we see it in Vrindavan now. If you go on a parikram marg now, it's all paved and bricks and bitumen and it's kind of a hard slog to walk around Vrindavan these days. Your feet get really pounded by the pavement. But when we went, when we first started going to Vrindavan, much of the is it the western side? Used to just be all sand, silver sand. Like Raman Reddy is known as the silver sands, and it used to be, and there wasn't anybody there. It was just the open field, and maybe a couple of dogs that you had to keep an eye on. That's the only place in India where I've been threatened by a dog. Came up going, but it was super peaceful. You go out there and chart your rounds. There's no tractors. It was just really pleasant, and you got a bit of a feel for Vrindavan. These days, it's all houses and shops and tractors and noise, and it's the transcendental abode of Vrindavan is being covered by all of this concrete and cement and bitumen and bricks and noise and rubbish, tractors. You know, we were doing the parikrama. I think the last time we did the Vrindavan parikrama, we were walking around that side and there was this tractor coming down the road, and all of a sudden it started snaking. I thought, what's going on here? And then it really went like this. And then all of a sudden, to the edge of the paraphernalia room on that side. Then it went all the way around. And it was going to hit, it would have hit us. But there was a stobie pole there. And it hit the stobie pole, bang! And three or four guys in the back of the trailer, they fell off. One of them fell into the gutter, and he was unconscious. And the tractor just then went all the way over the other side of the road into the field. And we were kind of like, would have been finished off. But fortunately, there was the pole there, so Krishna saved us. I learned a lesson from that. You have to be prepared for anything. Right? And Krishna can take everything we have, Krishna can take away just like that. So anyway, simple people, rural people, the farmers, they're not very sophisticated, they're not very elevated from a material perspective. Thank you. So the gopis are like that. They're very, you know, they're not like elevated devotees like Brahma and Shiva in exalted positions, sitting on big thrones and having lots of suitors and servants and fanfare. You know, when Lord Brahma comes or Lord Shiva comes, then there's a lot of respect given to them. Maybe not so much Lord Shiva. Some people even are not able to appreciate him. But certainly Lord Brahma is, because he's the original, the Adikavi, and the, you know, the maintain, he's establishing the whole universe. But then he gets a lot of respect and recognition. And the gopis are not like that. They're very simple-hearted, not in big positions, and yet, despite the fact that they live very simply and they have a simple lifestyle, they're considered to be the topmost devotees because of the display of affection between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan, the closeness of those relationships. Even though Lord Brahma is a very, very exalted devotee and blessed by Krishna, Krishna appeared himself, Lord Vishnu appeared actually, to advise Lord Brahma what his service is and how he should perform it. And you know, Krishna shook his hand, right? In this description in the Bhagavatam, shook his hand and congratulated him, right? Lord Brahma, yeah. So you know, there's a certain degree of closeness, but not the kind of closeness that we see in the relationship between Krishna and the Braja Gopis, especially, or the residents of Braj. They're strongly attached to Krishna, and Krishna is strongly attached to them, and their relationship is, you know, the cowherd boys would come to Nanda Maharaj's house early in the morning and want to collect Krishna to go into the forest. You know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. They're tired of lying in bed waiting to go out into the forest with Krishna that day. Right? So 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, they're up knocking on the door. Okay, can we go out and play with Krishna now? No. Mother Yashoda has to say, go away. You know, it's not daytime yet. But they're very, you know, strongly attached. And the cowherd girls are always glancing at Krishna, hoping to get his glance back. Which enhances their mood. You know, boys and girls like to look at each other, right? And they smile, or they scowl, depending on what the rasa is, what's been going on, how much teasing has been going on. Right. So, as I mentioned here, you know, the gopis would be completely frustrated by Krishna's teasing. But yet, when he left, they couldn't. They were so, even though he annoyed them and made them upset so much that they'd say, you know, go away. I don't want to see you anymore. Right? You're teasing me so much. Go away. You know, you're frustrating me. Then Krishna would go away, and they think, oh no, I didn't want him to go away. Their attachment, their affection for him is so strong. So it's a very intimate exchange of here, laughter, humour, glances. Very, very affectionate. The affectionate nature of those relationships, so intimate, not seen anywhere else. So unique. And as Prabhupada says here, the relationship between the gopis, all of the residents of Braj, and Krishna is such that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Huh? So what does that mean? If Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, then when he comes to the material world, that means that he brings Vrindavan with him. Right? He never leaves Vrindavan, so wherever he goes, that's Vrindavan. Certainly in his, you know, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna form, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, that original form of Krishna. And even in, as Prabhupada says here, even in Vrindavan now, we can't see Krishna, but he's still there. Right? Krishna has his prakat, his manifest lila, and he also has his unmanifest lila. So that means that even now, Krishna is in Vrindavan, because he never leaves Vrindavan. Right? So he's there, but you have to be a very, very exalted devotee, like the gopis and the those devotees in the mood of Vatsalya Rasa, Sakya Rasa, especially, in order to see Krishna's pastimes. Right? We see it in Radharani. Radharani was so deeply absorbed in Krishna's, in the meditation of Krishna, that Krishna appeared as if before her. Her separation from Krishna is so strong and intense that meditation actually enables her to see Krishna in his unmanifest lila. We see that with Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was one time Lord Chaitanya was dreaming, and he dreamt that he was with Krishna in Vrindavan, and the devotees had woken him up. I can't remember exactly the details. Was it morning? Or anyway, the devotees had woken him up. Perhaps he was in ecstasy and he was unconscious, and the devotees were having kirtan. I think that's it. To revive him. And then he chastised the devotees because he said, I was just in Vrindavan with Krishna. What did you wake me up for? Right? So his mood of separation from Krishna was so powerful and so strong that it enabled him to see and be with Krishna internally. Which is as good as externally for the devotee. So his mood of service, especially service in separation, which is considered to be the highest mood of service, and it's manifest by the gopis. No big positions, no recognition, practically speaking, no public recognition of their devotion, right? For the gopis. It all has to be done secretively. We were discussing this the other day. Because, you know, they're young girls and he's a young boy, and so they're not supposed to be associating with each other. So they have to hide their affection for each other from the elders. Right? So, very, very unassuming in one sense. Unassuming, but considered to be the topmost devotees because of this mood of, you know, this absorption, this affection for, this love for Krishna, and that Krishna reciprocates because of his love for them. And so, therefore, the pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan are considered to be the pinnacle of devotion because of that very, very intimate mood of the intimate exchanges between the Krishna and those devotees. And so then, you know, when Krishna would leave to go to the forest, or when he eventually left Vrindavan, then because the gopis were always absorbed, and the other residents of Vrindavan were always absorbed in their meditation on Krishna, the words mentioned here. What is it? Diyo Vatashtu. Brajastriya. Brajastriya. The damsels of Braj. Right? They followed him. Dribhi. With the eyes. Anuprabritta. Following. Diya. By the intelligence. Avatashtu. They sat silently. So, they followed Krishna with their eyes, and then when he was out of sight, they just meditated on him. Right? This is, the, you know, this is just like, you know, we see with the young devotees when they're getting married. You know, we introduce them, and then you can't separate them, right? And then when they are separated, you can be sure they're thinking, oh, beloved, you know, they're and they get a little bit addle-brained, right? Sometimes you think, wake up, right? So when there's that affection, then one is thinking of the other, the other is thinking of the other, and so they're kind of a little bit, what's the word? Stunned. Right? Oh, she's so beautiful. She's so... Oh, he's so... Who's been married here? Raise your hands. You know what I'm talking about? Huh? After a while, you wake up. After a few fights. After a few disagreements, then you wake up to the reality. So, but here, they followed him with their eyes when he was out of sight by their intelligence, and then as a consequence, avatashtu kila. Avatashtu means they sat silently. Kila, indeed, kritya seshaha, without finishing household duties. When Uddhava went back to Vrindavan, he noticed that everything was all cobwebbed and unkempt, and everybody was just sitting stunned. Nothing was going on. When he first went to Vrindavan, then there were the cows, and there was activity, and there was laughing and chanting, and very active Vrindavan, right? But then he saw the Vrindavan, where the gopis and the gopas and the residents of Vrindavan were meditating on Krishna in separation, and it was like it was a place of desolation. Nothing was happening. Everybody was stunned in their separation, feelings of separation from Krishna. So this is the pinnacle. This is the topmost devotional service. Nobody can excel the gopis, and no one can excel Krishna. No one can excel him, even in the dealing of love exchange between boys and girls. So the residents of Vrindavan are still there. Krishna is still there, but unmanifest. And in that mood of following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, this is the example given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, serving them in that mood of separation, very, very elevated and advanced pure devotees can see Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. But that doesn't mean that we should act as if stunned, right? Unable to do our household, our, what is it? Krityaseshaha. What does Prabhupada say? One shouldn't try to seek out Krishna hidden in the bushes of Vrindavan. Right? Prabhupada says, one should, was it Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Prabhupada quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But one should act in such a way so that Krishna will see him or her. Right? This is very elevated devotional service that we should not imitate. We're not on that platform, and even if we are on that platform, we still don't imitate it. Right? Or we don't practice it. These very, very elevated pastimes of Radha and Krishna, the epitome, as I said the other day, the acme of devotional relationships with Krishna, are not to be imitated, even discussed, actually. Lord Chaitanya didn't discuss the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna with the general devotees. He didn't. He discussed them with 3.5 devotees, right? Very intimate associates. Ramananda Roy, Swaroop Damodar, was it Sikhi Mahiti, and his sister, right? She was considered half a devotee. Don't ask me why. But anyway, you know, Lord Chaitanya's, and even in the later pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, where he was deeply absorbed in this Vipralamba Seva mood of separation, it was private. It wasn't a public display or a public demonstration. You know, Prabhupada, the devotees would ask Prabhupada, you know, what will we do? We get these devotees who come in and they roll on the floor and they cry and they say, Radhe, Radhe, and, you know, and Prabhupada said, kick them in the head. Kick them in the head. And see what happens. Not, you know, external displays of devotion really don't mean a lot in reality, right? Just looking, you know, peaceful and blissed out. What does that mean? What does it mean? We can't tell the internal devotion of a person simply by their external, you know, how they look. And you know, you get all sorts of weird displays of devotion in Vrindavan. You know, you get the men dressed up in saris with lipstick on and everything, and peacock feathers coming out of their heads and stuff. What do they call them? The shaki beki, right? But they're just, it's just weird. It's just weird. So these pastimes are to be understood, and we can meditate on them, surely. But generally speaking, we don't discuss them in an open forum or publicly. They're way more advanced than we can understand, especially when we don't understand that we're not the body for a start, right? That this is actually the internal potency of Krishna working. We tend to look at things from an external platform rather than an internal platform. And there's a danger if we're not fully purified in heart, discussing these pastimes means that we look at it from a mundane perspective. Just looking at the externals. So, which is one of the reasons why we start from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we start from the basics, the Bhagavad Gita, we start from a very simple understanding of devotional service, and we demonstrate that understanding by rendering, fairly menial service, like the gopis are rendering menial service. They're not like Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, very, publicly elevated personalities that get a lot of puja and recognition and so forth, have followers. If we want to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, then we just do very simple, menial, devotional service. Prabhupada gave the example of the old lady who would always bring water from the Jamuna to Radha Damodar temple in the morning. You heard that story? And Prabhupada said, by that service alone, she's going to go back home, back to Godhead. Every morning she would go, fill her pitcher up with water, put it on her head, and take it to the pujaris so the pujaris could do their seva. Right? Very, very simple service. Not big, no recognition for doing stuff like that. If we're seeking recognition for our service, this is a disease. If we want to be known as a big, big devotee, it's a disease. Or it may not be, but we have to be careful that it isn't motivated from the wrong platform. We test a person's sincerity by how much service they do, their service attitude, and their desire to just do what's required. That's what Krishna wants. Not that we do service so that people can see us. Huh? We have on festival days, we have the crew who turn up, want to do all the pujas and bathing and this and that and the other thing, right? The regular devotees who do the service every day, they're just kind of pushed aside a little bit, and then the big guys come in. Huh? It's not necessary. But it's an example. Oh, I want to be seen. Here I am. Woohoo! I'm a big devotee. No. The big devotee is a devotee who turns up every day and does that service. Flu, cold, hot. The deity room can be the most austere place to do service. Right? Where's the pujaris? It's the most austere place. Right? Got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or before, every day, hot, cold. I used to get chilblains in the wintertime, bathing Gornitai. You know what chilblains are? It's when the blood stops flowing in your feet because it's so cold. So, you've got to be in a... you've got your feet on a cold marble floor, and it takes the blood, it takes the circulation out, and then it kind of dies a little bit. So the skin dies. get a chilblain. But that's the big devotee. The big devotee is the devotee who keeps doing their service every day, day in and out. They bathe the deities, they dress the deities, they take on the austerity of doing the puja day. That's the test of a person's devotion. Their commitment to just doing the seva, whatever it is. And as Prabhupada said, you know, the person who's doing the puja isn't any better than the person who's sweeping the courtyard. Because they're still serving Krishna. The service is the same. If we want to develop an intimate relationship with Krishna and with the devotees, then we do it by the rendering of service. And the rendering of service doesn't mean what I like to do, right? What I like to do. It's doing what you're asked to do. You know, we were discussing the other day at Urban Yoga, what are the qualities of a disciple? One of the qualities, one of the devotees brought, you know, we named most of them, but one of them qualities was anticipating what the guru wants. In other words, thinking ahead, rather than just being told what to do, we have to think what to do. If we can't think of what to do, then we should go and ask. How should I do this? That's our process. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. We approach humbly and then we ask, how can I serve you? That's what Prabhupada said. He said, the only question that I asked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, how can I serve you? That's the mood of the gopis in Vrindavan. How can I serve Krishna? Even, you know, Radharani's prayer is, even if you want to be with another gopi, I don't mind. Right? Now, can you imagine that? She's so attached to want to be with Krishna. You know, when Krishna's with somebody else, she could easily say, ah, Krishna, who is this Krishna? You know, he doesn't want to be with me. Ah, forget the guy. Useless. Right? There's that song in South Pacific. You know that song? I gotta get that guy. No, I gotta wash that guy right out of my hair and send him on his way. Right? So you know that you expect that to be the mood, right? But no, she says, if you want to love someone else, I'll bring her to you. If you're happy with someone else, then that's my happiness. You know, but we're usually thinking, you know, I only want to serve Krishna the way I want to serve, and if I've got to do it a way other than what I like, then I don't like it. Is that right? This is selfish. But we see with the gopis, if we really want to follow the gopis' mood, the gopis' mood of service, then it's very, very, you know, it's very, very, very humble. And even if it makes us brokenhearted, you know, and that's hard. That's hard to develop that mood of service in separation. You know, so it means we're serving somebody, we're serving Prabhupada, we're serving Krishna, and we're doing some crummy job, you know. And there's nobody there to glorify us. Right? Got to put out the rubbish. Midnight after Janmashtami, everybody's gone home and there's just a big mess. Right? You ever been faced with that? Try it. It's an exquisite taste. You want to go to bed. You're supposed to get up in the morning. And you've got to clean up. And there's nobody there that goes, Jai, 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 Haribol, you're a big devotee. You just got to do it. You just got to be a little devotee and do it. And be satisfied that Krishna's satisfied. And the devotees are satisfied. But there's nobody there to pat you on the back and tell you what a good fellow you are. So that's, you know, that's the kind of devotion that we need to embrace. Instead of complaining, you know, about how tough everything is. Life is tough. I don't know if you've noticed. And some of the devotees think, oh, you know, it's too hard. I don't want to do it. Why don't they make arrangements for me? But, you know, first of all, try doing it without the association of the devotees and an opportunity to serve Krishna. You know, just go and, if devotional service is too hard, try the alternative. Right? Try the other alternative and see whether that's any better. It's not. That's why we're devotees. But then what happens is when we become a devotee, but then things go wrong. Because that's the material world. It's designed like that. This is not the place to be happy. It's a place of struggle. And to test us, and to test our sincerity, and most of all, to get rid of our pride, because generally we tend to think we're better devotees than we are. That's the cheating propensity. Then Krishna knocks us down. And we think, oh, why me? What did I do wrong? But Krishna does that for our benefit. I mean, it's hard for us to see when we're suffering some setback that actually that's Krishna teaching us a lesson. And that it's for our benefit. So one of the ways to remove that pride is to go to our authorities, you know, our, the senior devotees, even the devotees who are managing the temple, and submitting before them and saying, what do you want me to do? That cures pride. Because then you have to do what somebody else tells you to do. That's our system. And it's simple, it's not very difficult. Our tendency is to want to do what we want to do. But that doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that we're making advancement. That we're actually pleasing Krishna. If we're not pleasing the devotees, then we're not actually pleasing Krishna. We may be doing what I like to do, and it may be in the guise of devotional service. I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and but if it's not pleasing the devotees that we're working with, then ultimately it is not pleasing Krishna. That's the test. The test of devotional service very often, as I say, is you know, and it's mentioned right in the beginning. The first 10 items, fifth and sixth item of devotional service, I think it is. Fifth and sixth. Accept things which one ordinarily wouldn't accept and give up things that one doesn't want to give away. Right, this is right at the beginning of the 64 items of devotional service. So, you know, if you think that's tough or it's hard, it's part of our process. And it's designed to shrink our pride. And so it's good. It's not bad. It's not bad to go to the spiritual master or to go to the devotee who's giving out services for us and say, what do you want me to do? And then do it, you know, embrace it enthusiastically. Oh, how come I got to do this again? How come I got to go to Crossways all the time? Or whatever it is that we don't like to do. But the test, this is the test. The real test of devotion is not how much one, you know, cries and swoons. Right? The test test is when things get tough, you keep going. Right? Keep doing your service. Despite the fact that everybody else has abandoned you, they've got a sore throat, they've gone to bed, or whatever, what else, you know, whatever else it is, so many things. But just, you know, we keep, what do they say? Keep on keeping on. That's devotional service. And if we're pleasing the devotees, then you can be sure that we're pleasing Krishna. That's what makes a tight team of devotees, when there's that mood of service. Not that we all, you know, try to do what I want to do. You know, I explain to devotees, you know, I spent most of my life doing things that I didn't want to do. But I never regret it. Never regret it. Because that makes us a better devotee. So this is somewhat in the mood of the residents. You know, if we really want to be as elevated as the residents of Vrindavan, then we have to start off at the, you know, at the bottom, at the basics. Do the basics. Then in due course of time, the realizations and the ecstasy will come. Right? But then we have to be careful. You know, there is ecstasy in devotional service, no doubt. But we're not here for the ecstasy. Right? We'll only do something because we like to do it, because we get ecstasy out of it. What happens if you don't get ecstasy? What do? Don't do it? Right? Ah, I'm not doing this, no ecstasy. So we have to be careful. Ecstasy will come. But what happens if it goes away? And, you know, I gave the example the other day. Daruka, he was fanning Krishna and the ecstasy was getting too much and it was making him tremble. You know, if the real, like the ecstasy here, when Krishna was away from the devotees, they would have horripilations. You know, lumps and bumps would appear on their bodies. Right? When we're separated from our beloved, you know, we don't get lumps and bumps on our bodies, do we? That's the height of ecstasy. But that's not why. So Daruka, you know, the ecstasy was coming, but he was praying, oh, "Go away, let me just do my service. I got a fan, you know." If the ecstasy gets in the way of our service, then we discard the ecstasy and stick to the service. Huh? That's our system. Ecstasy will come. Some agony will also be there. They call it the agony and the ecstasy. Right? So we have to expect a little bit of agony, then we really appreciate the ecstasy. But it's got to be done from this, you know, from the basis of seva, service. And, you know, sometimes you have to serve devotees that you don't even like. Right? Or they're bullies. Or they'll shout at you. Right? You imbecile. But if it's pleasing to Krishna, then we do it. I don't think there's any bullies here at this point. The bullies went away some years ago. We can bring them back if you like. One devotee said, I've said this before, but one devotee said to me once, he said, Aniruddha, he said, after what I did to you, I'm surprised that you didn't bloop. We don't have devotees like that, though. But it's hard, you know, you come to the realization, I've got to do what these devotees want me to do. They're not being particularly nice about it, But that's going to keep Krishna happy. So I do it. Huh? How do you like that? And we don't have, we're lucky, we don't have that kind of a situation anyway. All right, I should finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Mark Majig.
Yeah, I'm a pupil.
It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day today, right? So I've got another class to give on that.
What
then? After you've asked a few questions. It's a half day fast. We're not in a hurry to go anywhere.
When you're saying Krishna is here in Vrindavan all the time.
Yes.
I'll tell you an example.
Yeah.
We were invited by one of our friends in Vrindavan for dinner. He told me the true story.
The true story?
Yeah.
Okay.
The story can be true or fictitious.
I hope it's true.
Yeah.
For our benefit.
He bought a unit in Vrindavan, and then next day he wanted to go to our ISKCON temple. And when he got down at 4 o'clock home, then it pitched dark, the whole light went off. So he couldn't see anything. And because it was a new place, so he didn't know how to go to Vrindavan temple, ISKCON temple. So he was coming back. Can't go, so that I don't know the way. So a voice came, young boy, said, Baba, where do you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I wanted to go to this company. Come on, follow me. I'll take you. And he took, and as soon as the light came, he disappeared. That was Krishna. So you can see Krishna, how he works.
Any other comments or questions?
Second comment, I'll tell you.
Second, hang on, you've had your go. Let somebody else have a go. Just in case we get another story like that. Unverifiable. Yep.
You know how you were saying that we need to give up the things that we want to give up?
I didn't say we need to. We may be required to.
Okay, if we don't want to, then how do we let them go?
Oh, I see. Yeah, they're good for us. It's good for us because it teaches us that we're not the body.
Yeah, we do have that understanding, but do you actually apply that? Is there a particular level of devotion, like maybe the Nishtha stage or Ruchi stage, that it happens automatically or does it have to be?
Shraddha. Faith.
That's where we need.
That's right. One has to have faith that, Prabhupada says this, one has to have faith that by serving Krishna, all desirable things will be attained. Right? Isn't it? One has to have faith that by serving Krishna, then all things desirable will automatically be obtained in due course of time. And, you know, it manifests at the stage of sadhu sangha, because in the association of the devotees, we get an opportunity to render service. And that's where we'll refine that mood. Not, you know, shirking or hiding away from opportunities to do service. Or avoiding service when we're asked to do it. This is it's all challenging, isn't it? It's all challenging. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. And Krishna's expert in bringing us to that point where we have to make a choice. And it usually manifests in the association of devotees. Sometimes in politically, you know, surcharged environments. And then you have to do what you're asked to do. I know, you know, I was working on a project with another devotee, and we put years, 6-7 years of effort into it, and then we presented it to the GBC, and then we got we got criticized heavily for some of the things that we were proposing. And I thought unjustly. And, you know, especially in a political environment like that, my reaction is to fight and argue. Right? But, you know, when you're in an august body of devotees, then you have to keep quiet. Just say, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. Apart from the fact that you put, you know, you did some good work, right? But it just happened, you know, the winds of fortune and worth blowing in a particular way. And so a few people happened to pick on some of the things that needed improvement. And so, you know, then you're going to go, okay, all right. You have to accept it. Hang on, let's see if there isn't anybody else. Yeah, Mama Han. Sorry?
Krishna is very much attached to the
movies. Yeah, yeah.
So he allowed himself to be attached in both ways relationship. So it's like apparently looks like partial and his particular
asana. No, he's not. No, I wouldn't say that because he's also exchanging affection with the cows and the cowherd boys and the gopas, the elderly gopas. He's Krishna is, what is it? Rasa Vaisaha, isn't it? He's the source of all rasa. And so he's, you know, he's able to exchange affection with all of the residents of Vrindavan. Not that he only likes the gopis and oh, you're just a cowherd boy, or you're just a cow, you know. Krishna's able to affectionately reciprocate with all of them in different ways. You may have expected, I can give you some examples. Your guru comes and you want to be noticed, right? You ever experienced that? Right? When your guru comes to town, what do you want to do? Hare Bol Maharaj, here I am. I'm your servant. Actually, I'm your best servant. Huh? But you're ignored. You know, the other more important servants, they do menial, you know, they're doing closer, intimate service, and you're being ignored. How do you cope with that? What do you do if you're being ignored? How do you deal with it? Push in.
Remind about yourself
once again. Yeah. Have to be humble. But then, you know, in the midst of all of the, you know, the rough and tumble of devotional competition, your spiritual master sees you and has a chat with you and, you know, says something that clears up some doubt that you might have had, or, you know, you get some association and then you're satisfied. Krishna makes the arrangement so that everybody is satisfied. You may not be getting it all the time, the affection or the attention. But my experience is that very often Krishna will reciprocate in such a way so that one realizes that actually Krishna and the spiritual master are looking after us. Right? So Krishna's able to reciprocate with everybody. And he does so according to the nature, you know, according to the surrender. So when we're not surrendering, then Krishna may ignore, we may be ignored. But when we are surrendering and giving our all, then Krishna reciprocates in so many ways, directly and indirectly. So, you know, that we shouldn't think, you know, Krishna's favours or prefers one rasa over another, and that he's not able to affectionately reciprocate as a consequence, but rather he's able to reciprocate with all of us appropriately according to our surrender. And he has affection ultimately for everyone. How's that sound? Not that only the gopis are the topmost devotees and everybody else gets ignored. Huh? Okay. So... The other one was a true story and impossible to ascertain. Today is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, so we're going to have Pushpanjali at 12:30, right? So if you're here, good to come. And you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one sense is the seed. He's the seed of the modern day preacher that was manifest completely in the foundation of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness by Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda Thakur started using the printing press. He started writing books in English. He sent them to the Western libraries. He started presenting, you know, prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the cult of Vaishnavism had fallen into disrespect after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's passing because of the proliferation of upper sampradayas. You know, like I mentioned before, the Sakhi Bekis. The people who dress like gopis, you know, adopt the external dress, but not the internal. You know, just because you put on the dress of a woman, doesn't mean that you become a woman, right? Or vice versa. A woman can put on a man's clothes, but it doesn't mean that they become a man, right? So you know, all sorts of degraded activities performed in the guise or under the banner of, you know, being a devotee of Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, identified all of these upper sampradayas and started to preach against them. And it's interesting, you know, worked in cooperation with the current culture and society of the time, worked with the British. But used his erudition and his scholarship and his devotion to write so many books. Following in the footsteps of the Goswamis, wrote so many books, wrote so many songs explaining the very intimate and the very basic primary elements of devotional service from the lowest to the highest. So you know, you can see in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's work the introduction of a modern style of preaching, organizing the Nam Hat, so that the you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote the treatise on the Nam Hat, describing all of the different positions, and had his own groups of devotees preaching and working in that fashion. That was later perfected by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who built on the foundational work that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, so that we have the Gaudiya Math. But then the Gaudiya Math, due to not following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction, I think it could be reasonably said that they didn't understand his instructions, and that's why they weren't able to put it into practice. And so Prabhupada, in order to especially affect the GBC, Prabhupada established the GBC prior to his departure, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just told his disciples what to do, but it appears as if they didn't really understand how to do it, and so that's why they didn't do it, and they went on the acharya, you know, path. So we see we can see in Prabhupada's manifestation of ISKCON, we can see a further refinement, a further development of the ideas that originally came from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and came from his study of the Shastra, the study of the Goswami's works, and his re-establishing the credentials, if you like, of the Vaishnav culture. You know, I remember when I first saw the devotees and I saw them chanting and dancing, and I didn't understand the culture behind it. People didn't understand the culture behind, just like Lord Chaitanya was criticized by the sannyasis in Banaras for just chanting and dancing. And so people thought, oh, they're just a bunch of sentimentalists, swooning and going on, but no philosophy, right? But I remember when the first time I went to the temple on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's disappearance day, the devotees read from the introduction to the Vaishnav songbook. And when I heard about the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then it made Krishna consciousness make so much more sense, because I was able to understand the historical setting within which the tradition was established, the tradition that it came from, and how, you know, the Western manifestation was actually supported by a very solid philosophical, practical, devotional, spiritual culture. Then the devotees showed me the life and times of Sri Chaitanya, a slideshow that they used to have in those days in these little boxes that were like a screen. They folded down and you opened them up and they had a screen and you could turn them on and it would play this project these shows. So then I saw the life of Lord Chaitanya and I thought, wow, this all makes sense, right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur helped us, but also in his time, help people to make sense of what, you know, devotional service is, what Krishna culture really is. So it's important, you know, today is a very important day for us because, we can get an opportunity to glorify Bhaktivinoda Thakur and receive his blessings to push on the preaching of Krishna consciousness, following that mood of establishing a proper understanding of devotional service and a proper practice of devotional service. Okay? So we will meet here at 12:30. Gwantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.